Thank you, Jonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Monday, March 8th, 2015. Sorry about that. It's actually March the 9th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemire.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Occupy Africa Unity Square protest leader Itai Dzamara has been allegedly abducted by suspected state agents while at a barbershop in his neighborhood.
They accused him of stealing a cow and they grabbed him and shoved him in the vehicle and sped off with him. He managed to come up with one name that he shouted as he was being shoved into the car.
Police have arrested scores of villagers who converged at a farm in Matobo district that is being taken over by a state security agent.
About 40 of them were taken. However, because of transport challenges that the territory is facing, they left. The elderly women and some guys at Natisa Doctor Center, and they told them that they're going to come and pick them up.
And the Judicial Services Commission has fired Gweru magistrate Gertrude Mayunyese over charges of misconduct. Occupy Africa Unity Square protest leader Itai Dzamara has been allegedly abducted by suspected state agents while at a barbershop in his neighborhood. Occupy Africa Unity Square Secretary General Charles Nyoni says Dzamara was abducted by five men who forcibly shoved him in a white Isuzu twin cab. Nyoni tells Studio 7 the men approached Dzamara and accused him of stealing a cow before they grabbed him. He says efforts to locate him are proving to be futile as the police are professing ignorance over the issue.
What happened this morning was Mr. Dzamara was at his home place and he was just in his neighborhood where he was going to take a haircut at his favorite barber. And then suddenly they appeared in Isuzu truck, a twin cab, white in color, and they accused him of stealing a cow and they grabbed him and shoved him in the vehicle and sped off with him.
Did he manage to identify any of these five men?
He managed to come up with one name that he shouted as he was being shoved into the car. And that name is a code name of one of the security agents that we know him by. We call these security guys with code names. So we then come to a conclusion that he was abducted by security agents. Up to now, we have tried all avenues of asking the policemen and the CID department as well as the peace guys. They all deny any knowledge of having in their custody Mr. Itai Dzamara. We have not yet identified where he is, nor neither do we know where he is at the moment. But we strongly believe that he is within the CID department.
That was Occupy Africa Unity Square Secretary General Charles Nyoni in Harare with Studio 7.
The MDC, led by Morgan Tsvangirai, says it's in the process of writing to the Southern African Development Community, SADC Troika, the African Union Commission Chairperson, and the United Nations, informing them about the deteriorating socio-economic and political conditions in Zimbabwe. MDCT spokesman Obed Gubtu says they are concerned about President Robert Mugabe's recent threat to the judiciary over a court case pitting him with expelled party members Didmus Mutasa and Rugare Gumbo.
Gubtu tells Studio 7 the MDCT is also unhappy about the government's delay in aligning some laws with the new constitution.
The main input of these letters is just to bring the attention of SADC, of the AU, and also of the United Nations member states of the deteriorating socio-economic and political conditions in Zimbabwe. We are saying, how can a head of state, who is not only a head of state, but also the chairperson of SADC and the chairperson of the AU, be at the forefront of breaching his own constitution, threatening the judiciary, and doing things that are really only consistent with a tin pot dictator? So we are saying surely the situation has gone out of control. The wheels are now off. It is now time for SADC to intervene, now time for the AU to intervene, and indeed it is now time for the United Nations itself to intervene. Otherwise, the situation in Zimbabwe might deteriorate to levels that might lead to serious political instability.
President Mugabe is the chair for SADC and the African Union. Do you see yourselves getting a fair deal from these organizations, considering his influence?
We are very confident that we'll get a good year, because although Mr. Mugabe is the ceremonial chair of SADC, as well as the ceremonial chair of the AU, it doesn't give him carte blanche to block these letters from being discussed.
That was MDCT spokesman Obet Gutu speaking with us from Harare.
Meanwhile, the MDC renewal team says the Speaker of Parliament's hands are tied to rule on a request by the MDC formation led by former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai to recall 21 legislators aligned to the renewal faction. Thomas Chiripasi has more details from Harare.
MDC Renewal Team General Secretary Tendai Biti told a news conference in Harare today that his party's formation is not happy with plans by the Tsvangirai MDC formation to recall a total of 21 parliamentarians and senators from the two lawmaking houses. Biti said recalling the lawmakers at a time when the MDCT has vowed not to participate in any by-elections before key democratic reforms were implemented was tantamount to surrendering political space to President Robert Mugabe's ruling ZANU-PF party. Nonetheless, Biti told reporters that the Speaker of Parliament cannot make a ruling on the MDCT's request because his hands are tied by the previous two rulings that he made last year, referring the matter to the courts. He said the MDC formation led by Mr. Tsvangirai has no legal standing to recall the legislators from Parliament, arguing that the former Prime Minister remains expelled from the opposition party following a meeting held by BT and some senior MDCT officials at Mandela Training Center in April last year.
So, the long and short of it is that this is a dispute in which the Speaker has made two determinations. When a judge makes a ruling on a matter, he becomes in law functus officio. He has made a determination. And anyone concerned with the correctness and legitimacy of the Speaker's ruling, he is free once more to approach the High Court of Zimbabwe in an application for review.
But MDCT spokesperson Obet Gutu told Studio 7 by phone that their fresh request to recall the BT-aligned legislators from the Augusta House was based on changed circumstances, giving the Speaker of Parliament, Jacob Mudenda, the right to make a ruling on the matter.
The allegation that the Speaker of Parliament and the President of the Senate are functus officio, meaning that they can no longer deal with this matter because they've already given a ruling on it, is with respect misguided.
It also said the 21 lawmakers should not be ejected from Parliament on the basis that they are now part of a new political formation calling itself the United Movement for Democratic Change, or UMDC. Meanwhile, Mudenda is expected to pronounce his decision tomorrow when Parliament resumes sitting. In a similar parliamentary matter, the expelled former ZANU-PF Secretary for Administration, Didmus Mutasa, and expelled Urungwe West legislator, Themba Mliswa, today filed an urgent application in the Constitutional Court challenging their expulsion from Parliament last week. Mutasa last week filed an application in the High Court seeking to nullify the outcome of the ZANU-PF 6th Elective Congress held in December last year, saying it was marred by several irregularities. The matter is yet to be heard in the courts. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
ZANU-PF Secretary for Legal Affairs Patrick Chinamasa is calling for a ceasefire against members alleged to be in the Joyce Mujuru camp. Addressing party supporters yesterday in Bulawayo, Mr. Chinamasa said the time has come for all party members to unite ahead of the 2018 general elections. He said members should stop victimizing the alleged dissidents and settling personal scores, warning witch hunters will be punished. Yesterday's meeting was part of the nationwide ZANU-PF restructuring currently underway. For perspective, reporter Ntungamili Nkomo reached political analyst Joy Mabenge, who says ZANU-PF is now trying to build bridges and minimize the damage caused by the expulsion of Mujuru and her allies.
The assumption and the trick there is to try and isolate the leaders from their own supporters and get back to supporters and realign supporters and make sure that the supporters support the political party and not the individuals. Otherwise, minus realigning the supporters, I would bet my last cent that if ZANU-PF were to go for an election or if the nation were to go for an election, honestly, ZANU-PF would not win. If they were to win, they would not win with the margins that we saw in the past, minus rigging and everything else. So it's a desperate measure to hold the party together, to bring the party together again. But I say, I don't think that this is going to resolve the war that President Mugabe started within his own party.
Can we see the party opening up to some of the members who have already been expelled?
It would again be foolhardy for anyone to imagine that the hardliners would suddenly open their doors and welcome those leaders, the so-called rebel leaders. That is not going to happen. If anything, what they can do is to try and isolate the leaders from their supporters.
Political analyst Joy Mabenge on the line with reporter Ntungamili Nkomo from Johannesburg, South Africa.
Direct from Washington, the voice of America, VOA.
Police have arrested scores of villagers who converged at a farm in Matobo District yesterday and on today and on Sunday, that is being taken over by Roderick Mashingaidze of the Central Intelligence Organization, or CIO. More than 40 people were arrested, while with scores also handing themselves over to the police in solidarity with the arrested villagers. We reached Pastor Angliston Sibanda, a leader of one of the civic organizations, Shalom Project, which was at the farm yesterday and was today helping those arrested with legal assistance.
Hundreds of people came in their numbers and they spoke one thing, and they were all in solidarity and speaking one message that they don't want this farm to be taken over. And if it's being taken over, let the villagers, the local people, the local from the community take it over, because they're invested, their projects that are operating in that farm. So they were expecting the Vice President, Perezela Mpoko, to address. Unfortunately, he didn't turn up. But the chiefs were there, namely Chief Matema, Chief Nyangazonke Ndweni, and Chief Masuku. Then after the meeting, some of the people went into the farm and they forced open the gates and actually pulled out some gates and some padlocks that Mashingaidze had put as a way of blocking people from accessing their chicken runs that are in the farm and their stock feed that are in the farm. So, and they left the farm without gates, without in some areas vulnerable. So in response to that, this morning villagers who have projects in the farm who can mobilize themselves and went to the farm to provide security, because there are no gates now, so there's no security. So they went in to the farm.
That was Pastor Angliston Sibanda. He spoke to Studio 7 on the line from Bulawayo.
Meanwhile, opposition parties and civic organizations yesterday thronged the homestead of a traditional chief, Masuku, where Vice President Pelekezela Mpoko was expected to address the crowd on Maleme Farm, which has been taken over by a state security agent. Mpoko did not turn up, and some of the angry villagers went to the farm and broke in, saying they wanted to feed the livestock, including ostriches, that were taken over by Mashingaidze. The two main opposition parties, led by Morgan Tsvangirai and Welshman Ncube, issued statements today condemning the designation of the farm. ZAPU members were also at the farm yesterday.
The Judicial Services Commission today fired Gweru Magistrate Gertrude Mayonyese over charges of misconduct. Chief Magistrate Mishrod Gubamombe confirmed Mayonyese's dismissal to Studio 7 over the phone, but said he could not provide further details as he was out of office. Mayonyese had been on suspension since October last year. Her conviction arose soon after she convicted and fined the stock thief Felix Mujuru $400 when he was found guilty of one count of stock theft. The mandatory sentence is 9 years. A High Court review of the case reversed the judgment compelling Mayonyese to pass the mandatory 9-year sentence and recommended that the magistrate be reprimanded for her conduct leading to her suspension and subsequent dismissal.
Under the Judicial Service Commission regulations, Mayonyese has 21 days within which to appeal against her dismissal. Mayonyese was not available for comment. High Court Judge Nokutula Moyo had also ordered the Law Society of Zimbabwe to probe Mujuru's lawyer Tondera Ichitere for allegedly manufacturing facts in the matter. Multiple sources in the Law Society of Zimbabwe told Studio 7 that Chitere was fined $500 by the Law Society of Zimbabwe. Law Society of Zimbabwe President Vimbai Nyemba told Studio 7 she can only comment tomorrow after consulting further. Mujuru was convicted of taking a bull belonging to Sifa Zirongwe Mukandi from the grazing paddock of farm number 5, Blinkwater, Mvuma, to his Matamba farm.
You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 919 medium wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15455 shortwave frequencies.
Coming up,
cholera fears grip Zimbabwe as a health expert says the country's health delivery system is in tatters.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
Soldiers from Chad and Niger have retaken the northeastern Nigerian town of Damasak from Boko Haram militants.
Doctors in Zambia say newly elected President Edgar Lungu needs treatment abroad for a condition that caused him to collapse in public on Sunday.
About 12 family members from Odzis Ada Transau, who were moved from Chiadzwa communal area in Manicaland province in 2010 and were served with eviction orders to vacate houses they occupied meant for school teachers, today came dead the Mutare District Administrator's office. They are protesting against the court order, vowing that they will not leave until their demands are met. VOA Studio 7 Statenda Gumbo reports.
The Philemon Joani Kambeni family allegedly seized teachers' houses after failing to secure adequate housing for their huge family of 14 women and over 35 children. They are part of more than a dozen individuals who are camping outside the Mutare District Administrator's office. Kambeni told VOA Studio 7 they will not leave until their grievances are met by local government officials.
We came here to the DA. They are the ones who moved us. They destroyed our house. We've been waiting for 5 years and coming here waiting to be told all the time that they will give us houses.
Another villager camping outside the district's administrator's office is Elizabeth Gamera, who was summoned to appear before the local courts for legally occupying teachers' houses.
We will live here once we have our housing that was destroyed. That's what we want from the DA. As a Zimbabwean, we deserve proper housing, clean water. Right now, I am a woman suffering. Where should I go? Shakaoma.
District Administrator Cosmas Chiringa said senior state officials are well aware of the plight of the villagers who were displaced when Engine Investments of China took over their land to mine alluvial diamonds. Chiringa said his office has in the past tried to assist the Kambeni family, which kept on identifying various pieces of land instead of taking what was being offered by the government. More than 1,000 villagers were displaced when Engin, Mbada Diamonds and Diamond Mining Company started mining in Manicaland province a couple of years ago. Reporting for Studio 7 in Washington, this is Tatenda Gumbo.
Thank you, Tatenda.
Reports on the outbreak of cholera in Mudzi, Beitbridge and Jiredzi have sparked fears of an outbreak reminiscent of that of 2008, in which about 4,000 people died. Zimbabwe's Deputy Health Minister, Dr. Douglas Gwatizo, says there's no reason for fear as they are on top of the situation. But Parliamentary Health Committee Chairperson Ruth Labode tells Studio 7's Ndimiyake Mwakalele in an interview that she is not surprised by the reports of the outbreak, which she attributes to the country's poor health delivery system.
A cholera outbreak can create like a sort of a chronic endemicity where it can be activated. Our concern is if it blows out of proportion and goes out of those traditional areas, and then becomes a bigger issue, it would actually ground the nation. I'm really hoping that those cases have been quarantined and the families are being followed up. Cholera is a good thing. Once you identify it, you can actually limit it in an area.
You've raised concerns about the country's state of health delivery in general, indicating that it is subpar and it's not really prepared to handle the extent of outbreaks, such as cholera, Ebola, if it was ever to come.
As a committee, we went on an outreach visit and we talked to people in the sector, including the Ministry of Health officials. You could tell, actually, that the whole system is now hanging on donor funds. Donors bring their funds targeted to a specific issue. So if something else on the side, like there's a cholera outbreak now, then the question is the donor going to be willing to allow you to divert your funds to go to that corner? It does not allow for complete universal coverage of health. There will always be pockets that have been neglected, like central hospitals. Central hospitals are closing. And yet that is our third line treatment where when all has failed in district hospitals, you must be able to meet the specialists at central hospitals, but you can't meet them because there's nothing they can do for you.
Some of the malfunctions that you've just mentioned, you pinned them down to corruption and lack of political will, which you say...
Oh, yes.
Can you expound on that?
One of the things we found was that, in the first place, the national NATPHARM, which is the national pharmaceutical company that is supposed to procure drugs, we found that it wasn't doing anything. 98% of the drugs were procured by donors. 2% were procured by the National AIDS Council, which means they are ARVs. But the distribution is the issue. These drugs are like distributed in a haphazard manner. You go to a rural health center, it's well stocked. You go to the next level, some drugs they don't have. You go to the central hospital, the shelves are empty. And then when you ask why, you are told that those drugs are earmarked for the district hospital, are earmarked for the central hospital. And you know, some of these things create then corruption. Because imagine yourself, you're a farm tech sitting in some Zamba Maramba Fungwe Rural Health Center, you're sitting on all these antibiotics, and you know you're underpaid, and you know you just need to take these things in a bag and go to the next pharmacy, and they'll be bought. What do you do? You're actually going to take them. And then we have the issue of tenders. Central hospitals, on top of not having very little budget from government, the informal tender system is very corrupt. You find antibiotic like amoxicillin you can buy for $5 in a pharmacy. The government institution is buying it for $10 or $15. And this is on a very shrinking budget. It can't carry that type of corrupt activities. I always say, you know, if only we could, as public sector managers, try to manage the little money you have, the way you manage your resources at home. To say, when the money is not there, how do I buy cheap? How do I ensure that this money can push me to this point?
Now,
and people don't care.
Now, already on the issue of budgeting, you're saying that the health delivery system is under-budgeted, crippling it from the very start.
Oh, yes. That's where the lack of commitment comes in from government. But my main concern is that it doesn't end there. The little budget he has given does not disperse it in the end.
So you sit in Parliament. How do you... personally, as an influential member of a committee for one, but then also a body that can make these changes, what can you do to ensure that the health delivery system can actually respond to the needs of the people when and if they need it?
Our approach is, let's keep on, which is difficult also to move for our oversight, let's keep on going into the health sector, into the hospitals, into the district institutions, and expose this corruption. Because when people feel there's somebody watching them, they will reduce the bad they do. And on the other side, continue lobbying the Minister of Finance to increase the budget. Actually, this year, my plan is, after the midterm, we will look for funding and call the minister on the table as a committee and say, Minister, I think this is what you should put in the budget. And hopefully you listen.
That was Dr. Ruth Labode, MDCT lawmaker and chairperson of the Parliamentary Health Committee. And apologies, earlier on we referred to Dr. Douglas Gwatidzo as the Deputy Health Minister. He is not, he's actually a health expert.
Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our hosts will be talking with experts and you, the listeners, about the current cholera outbreak in Zimbabwe.
To join the discussion, text us at 001-202-465-0318 so we can call you back from our studios.
And now an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On March 8th, many nations around the world observed the United Nations International Women's Day. It is a day to celebrate women's achievements throughout history and across nations. It is also an occasion to reflect on past struggles and accomplishments, and to consider what still must be done to improve the lives and opportunities of women. The Charter of the United Nations, signed in San Francisco in 1945, was the first international agreement to proclaim the equal rights of men and women. But even though women have made great strides since then, there is still much work to be done. Advancing the status of women and girls is critical to achieving successful outcomes for U.S. foreign policy priorities. The U.S. National Security Strategy notes that countries are more peaceful and prosperous when women are accorded full and equal rights and opportunity. The evidence is clear. Research indicates that nations that invest in women's employment, health, and education tend to have greater economic growth and improved health and education for children. The United States invests in women not only because it is the moral thing to do, but because it is one of the most strategic actions we can take. In fact, women are one of a country's greatest untapped resources, and they invest as much as 97% of their income into their families and communities. When a mother is educated, her children's chances of survival and of leading healthier lives increase. When women are free to participate in the economic life of a country, the conditions for sustainable development and prosperity will more likely take root. Any society striving to flourish must begin by empowering its women and by promoting for them the same rights that men already enjoy. On International Women's Day, we celebrate and honor women. We also renew our commitment to make the world a place where women are not excluded or marginalized, but are free to realize their full potential.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The music there of the Mahotela Queens, the three ladies have been together for more than 35 years in the music industry. And now, here are our top stories this evening.
Occupy Africa Unity Square protest leader Itai Dzamara has been allegedly abducted by suspected state agents while at a barber shop in his neighborhood.
Police have arrested scores of villagers who converged at a farm in Matobo district that is being taken over by a state security agent.
and the Judicial Services Commission has fired Gweru magistrate Gertrude Mayonyese over charges of misconduct.
That's our broadcast this evening.
And now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Jonga Kandemiri in Washington.
And I'm Chris Gande wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.